Minions of Evil, 10, count 'em. The Love Interest, Tricksters, and Walk-Ons and Cameos. We're looking at third-level characters who can grow into secondaries or even primaries this week on The Right Focus. Welcome to The Right Focus. We cover productivity, process, craft, and tools. Our podcast episodes last as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, drive a short commute, or take a brisk walk. All through the summer months, we focus on the craft of writing novels and novellas and epics, from beginning ideas to prepping for publication, week by week by week. We start this episode with our Minions of Evil, those villains that readers love to hate, the ones that can be totally evil or on the verge and sneaky with it, are those who maintain a balancing act between good and evil and keep our readers guessing. Minions serve the antagonist, openly or covertly, intentionally or unintentionally. Create scenes for these minions just as you did for allies, foils, and blocking figures. Two scenes to introduce, scenes that connect the minion with the antagonist, scenes to hint at upcoming conflict, and then that conflict scene, and the results of that conflict. What happens after the minions leave the main conflict scene? You'll have to decide. How deeply into the story do they go? How quickly do they die? Or do they survive to the end? Who are our 10 minions? Here are 5 simple opponents. We see these simple opponents most often because they are easy to set up and knock down. They function very well as minions, representatives of our powerful antagonist. For shorter or simpler stories, they can serve as the antagonist. First, the villain. An over-the-top bad guy. The classic example is Snidely Whiplash in the Dudley Do-Right cartoons. Straw Man, a character set up as a one-sided evil who is easy to defeat. The Devil Wears Prada is a good example. Bully, the stereotypical bully tries to intimidate those who are weaker. When confronted, the bully runs away like a coward. The Karate Kid is filled with bullies. The Beast is large and dangerous. Feared, because the primary motivation is animal-based. The Beast usually lacks human mercy because the sole focus is food. Think of the Beast as a predator hunting its prey. Jaws are the gray. Finally, we have Alien, the off-world stranger with unknown strengths and motivations, unknown weaknesses and reactions. The films Alien and Predator are perfect examples of this. We also have 5 not-so-simple opponents. Most writers do not write these not-so-simple evildoers as they truly are. They back off once the story gets going. When writers do follow through, we readers and audience get a memorable story that others try to imitate. The corrupted character no longer behaves in expected ways, but is driven by some inner perversion, usually of relationships or of motivation. Anatomy of a Murder presented a psychopathic murderer and his girlfriend. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane was a warped narcissist who could not move past the time when she was idolized, decades previously. The Femme Fatale has as a best example Basic Instinct. An alternative to this is the Black Widow, who kills the opposite sex for personal gain, whether that is monetary or an intrinsic goal not easily understood. Mastermind is relentless, clever, constantly adapting and learning, and determined to bring the opponent down, which is Terminator. The criminal is our 4th not-simple opponent. For example, Moriarty in the new Sherlock series. The criminal abides by the rules set for and by himself or herself. All social and governmental rules can and will be broken. A disturbed opponent is like Hannibal. While the criminal is interested in breaking institutional rules, the disturbed will break the most basic rules. We have a great abhorrence of cannibalism, for example. Hannibal, in The Disturbed, is fascinated by what others consider an abomination. All of these can function as antagonists. To a lesser extent, they can serve your antagonist just as easily. Of course, the best opponent seems not to be an opponent at all. The perfect person. An example is Mary Crawford in the 2007 Mansfield Park. Need I say more about the perfect person? Definitely not a minion is the love interest. In many stories of the quest, monster, our voyage and return, the love interest is reduced to nothing more than a signifier, a symbol. Often, the love interest was merely the woman beloved by the protagonist. Writers would walk the love interest into the story, proof that the protagonist had a heart and had something to come home to. Brief mentions of the love interest would keep her in the audience's mind. After everything was over, the protagonist came home, welcomed with open arms by a woman who never asked what had happened. The above description is the process used in many action and adventure movies and comic books of the past. If the female love interest had any involvement in the story, she served as an item in jeopardy that had to be rescued by the hero, who wasn't truly a protagonist. The Iron Man series has broken this mold with the character of Pepper, more so in the latter movies than in the first one. Pepper begins as an unrequited love interest. However, she still has to be fixed at the end of the third story. Raiders of the Lost Ark developed the love interest into an ally. Marion Ravenwood is depicted as a strong and independent woman. As she and Indy run across the airstrip, escaping from the Nazis, they are hand in hand and running stride for stride. More recent action-adventurer stories cast the love interest as a man, with the woman as the protagonist. However, that flip of gender does not remove the love interest from the total side character role. To change the love interest, create that person, male or female, as a member of the team. Lindsay Baroker does this very successfully in her Emperor's Edge series. The recent series, The Mummy, cast the male and female protagonist in equal parts, both with their individual skill levels. How will you handle your love interest? Kill them off early? That's the classic revenge story for the protagonist. Make them the traditional love interest? Then you need to write two scenes, the touching departure and the celebratory return. Add sticky notes to other scenes, the three stress point scenes, a twist or betrayal scene, the nadir and the zenith scenes. On that sticky note, write notes about your primary character's need for the love interest. Or will you make your love interest a team member? Now you need to write at least 5 to 6 or even more scenes. First, how the protagonist and love interest are a good match for each other. Second, how the love interest has essential skills for the team and do that more than once. Three, how the love interest is threatened early and late by the antagonist. Four, how the love interest proved her essential skill for the team by saving the day at some point in the story. Now we're on to the trickster. The trickster character thinks himself clever, but his actions only cause problems for everyone else. Don't make the trickster a comic character. The famous Navajo myth of Coyote is the perfect example of the trickster. Coyote gets involved in many different actions, some which work out for the good, some which do not. Going in, Coyote doesn't have expectations that his actions will cause problems. He just wants to be doing. His intent is neither benevolent or malevolent. He just wants things to happen. Coyote recognizes the power of the old man, a representative for God, that is so much greater than his own power. In this respect, he comprehends the limitations of his own abilities, but he still has fun. Puck, in Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, is a trickster much like Coyote. His pranks are not born in malice, although people may be emotionally hurt. He understands and obeys the authority of Oberon, but he may walk the edge of a sword in adding a little bit of fun to his audience. Loki of Norse myth has been called a trickster. He's not. He's a shapeshifter. He pretends to be helpful to Odin and Thor and the other Æsir, yet his purpose is to undermine them. He pretends to help the Æsir only to switch sides and help the giants, playing both sides. His pretense is born in malice, for he hates the Æsir. He also hates the giants. He cares only for himself. Since he cannot have the rule that he wants, he works to undermine all authority around him. Eventually, they see him for what he is and imprison him, with the venom of a serpent dripping upon him. Odysseus is a true trickster. He is clever. He devises ways to outwit people instead of only resorting to strength or authority. When he and his men are trapped in a cave by the Cyclops Polyphemus, he comes up with a way to help his men escape rather than be eaten. He also blinds the monster to ensure their escape. Enraged at being blinded and losing his dinner, the Cyclops chucks boulders around, hoping to injure the men who escaped him. After the escape from Polyphemus, Odysseus reveals his arrogance about being clever. Pride drives him to tell the Cyclops who blinded him. In doing so, he gives the Cyclops a direction to aim the boulders and nearly sinks the ships they are escaping on. The Cyclops prays to his ancestor Poseidon to punish Odysseus, and Poseidon does. Of course, Odysseus is best known for the Trojan horse, the ultimate trick that requires multiple steps, convincing the Trojans to pull the horse into the city, hiding quietly until the whole city is asleep, then sneaking out and opening the city gates for the conquering Greeks. Odysseus is a clever idiot. While he can use brute force and military skill, it's his intellect that helps him devise his traps and the escapes from other traps. As idiot, he must arrogantly ensure everyone knows he is the one who is clever. That's a simplistic explanation for trickster. If you use a trickster in your novel, remember that the character can be a prankster. Tricksters like Coyote and Puck have fun with their pranks, and only they would think of those as pranks. Neither considers the effects that will result from these pranks. They enjoy the chaos. Odysseus understands the necessity of order over chaos. He is representative of the clever prankster in an authority position, the tricks controlled to have an outcome beneficial to the side that he is on. Yet he still makes mistakes, for he doesn't fully consider the consequences of his actions. Pranks, fun, cleverness, chaos, no thought of consequences. These are the five traits required of every trickster. What scenes are needed for the trickster? How does the trickster save the day? That should be early to prove worth. How does the trickster flub up? And what are the consequences? How does the trickster redeem himself or herself for the protagonist? Like the love interest, our trickster needs essential skills to serve on a team, whether that team is a group on a quest or a mission, detectives solving a crime, business associates working on a financial or management goal, or friends just hanging out. I see about five scenes here. Do you? Finally, we have walk-ons and cameos. These are sticky note characters, not scene-worthy characters. Walk-on characters provide information or do minor errands. They are often hangers-on who have a single purpose. In this respect, you consider them stereotypes. Walk-ons should not take an active role and interfere with the protagonist as the main character. Cameos are characters you want to highlight, especially if they are important characters in previous books or in books to come. Since they are significant, you can use them again as a blocking figure, a foil, a confidant, an ally, or even a seeming ally, as long as the cameo remains true to the personality you created for them previously. Four roles to be filled by walk-ons and cameos. These are all archetypal characters. First, Threshold Guardian, who is determined to block the protagonist's passage, but once defeated will step aside and present no more difficulties. The Idol, the character that the protagonist has looked up to, but who is revealed as having clay feet. The Herald comes onto the stage to deliver important information, then leaves, job done. And the Jokester. This is not the trickster. The Jokester plays to an audience. He doesn't care about being witty or smart. He doesn't care about devising snares or escapes from snares. He will joke at the lowest level possible. He doesn't care about the audience's derision, as long as he is getting laughter. Clever tricksters do care about their audience's reactions. They want the adulation. A jokester's actions are usually reactions, a cyclical feeding off of his audience. Look back at the scenes you've written for opportunities to have a walk-on character or a cameo for a series to develop. Use sticky notes to add them into scenes, about 3 appearances per novel. With our minions of evil, love interest and tricksters, and walk-ons and cameos, we have really developed a well-shaped rough draft. Next week, we write the hardest things of all for our novel. No, I will not hint. Be there or be a square writer, jerking readers through the novel rather than letting it roll smoothly. Inspiration for this week comes from Sue Grafton, who talks about wonderful software over typewriters. The beauty of word processing, God bless my word processor, she inserts, is that it keeps the plotting very fluid. The prose becomes like a liquid that you can manipulate at will. In the old days, when I typed, every piece of typing paper was like cast in concrete. And Grafton's right. We've proved it this week and last week with the insertion of our secondary and tertiary characters. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Runes from Writers, Inc. Books. All through the summer months, our focus is the craft of writing. We are discovering your novel from beginning idea to prepping for publication. We'll work through the process stages of foundations to story, envisioning the story, analyzing story before, during, and after the draft, harvesting the story through revisions and enhancements, and prepping the story for publication. Many of these preps and guides are useful setups for the National Novel Writing Month in November. That's writing only, you know, no idea work. We can also use this information to solve issues with stories that we've abandoned. All those stories are crying in the wilderness. Time to rescue them with the right focus. Show notes for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com. Remember, whatever occurs, write on.